Apologies, we have one final question. It's virtual, if you can look at the camera.
Oh, I see.
From
okay.
News Talk Irish Radio.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Hi, Killian.
Ah.
Henry McKean here from News Talk Radio Ireland, coming from a pool top bar celebrating you. Congratulations.
Good for you.
You would love to have been involved in sport. Any particular sport?
Well, football, and I like to swim. I don't know how to swim, but I think I'd like to learn how to swim.
How many of your friends know how to swim?
Well, in the Dáil we were talking about this, and I'm in a group of 22. There's 22 of us, and only 2 of them can swim.
My goodness.
I know.
Where is the nearest pool?
I couldn't even tell you.
There's no one handy, that's for sure.
Yeah, I actually don't really know.
Yeah. And playing football, many, many girls are playing football now.
Yeah.
And there's no place to pursue that?
No, not close by.
You got your message across, but was anyone listening?
I hope someone was listening. I'm not quite sure if anything's been done, but I hope that eventually it will.
Now, you're coming, believe it or not, towards the end of your school career.
Yeah.
So it's kind of unlikely that anything will be done for you before you leave school.
Yeah. My main point was kind of more for like the next generation. Like, I'm going to have a niece in a few weeks, and I kind of want her to grow up with the facilities that I don't have.
So Mom died on the 23rd. And my son was away, and unfortunately the paperwork was not able to be completed, and she was, I found out on Friday, to be buried on Monday, the 28th, just last week. I'm losing track of the days, just last week. On the Friday when I heard, I contacted the service provider on where Luca was, which was, he was away, and they're based in Kilkenny, and I contacted the HSC. I had them contacted for me, and explained the circumstances and asked if I could have the cover to go to my mother's funeral, because there is no way you could take my son out in a car. I take him in the car, but I can't take him out the other side. You know, I can't get him out of the car. If he leaves the house, he's pumping his head and drawing blood and bashing himself. It's quite disturbing. So there's no fit position that I could take my son anywhere.
Okay.
Because he's regressed so far due lack of services. So I asked for that, and I waited a while, and then I got a message back to say, sorry for your loss, but we cannot help you. There's nobody available.
So what happened, Gail?
My son and I, till the last minute, we were dressed, and there was no way I could leave the house with my son, and I had no help. I have nobody else taking care of my son. I don't have any other, I don't have any sisters. I had 3 grieving brothers, you know, severely grieving brothers, and 1 brother abroad also grieving. And one of my own sons was abroad. Who doesn't live with me. But the reality was there was nobody. I had nobody. And it's not like you could leave him with a stranger or pay somebody to sit with him. That's not been a possibility for quite some time, because he's been so bad at self-harming, and the unpredictability of his condition requires that he's with people that know him very well.
So you didn't get to go, Gail, to your own mother's funeral?
Refused. And so my son and I had to, eventually found it online and had to watch it. My father couldn't attend, so he was in the nursing home because he was cited as too ill. He's not expected to go on much longer, and I don't think he will, because I've seen how he is. He was so ill he couldn't attend Mom's funeral either. So her only daughter was absent from her own mother's funeral, because I went to see my mom laid out in the funeral parlour on the Saturday. I brought my flowers and I spoke to my mom and told her what was happening and told her to please ask for help for me. I spoke to Mum. I can imagine my mum would have said, "Don't mind them, it'll be okay."
God,
I had to do it all alone. I had no support. I had nobody. And I'm devastated. And I just think if there's other people who've been forced to miss their own parents' funeral.
It's absolutely shocking, Gail.
I just want people to know what's going on. Because I think it's appalling. I think that the failure, the HSE's missionary statement, you can see it up online. I could nearly load it and read it to you, but you could see for yourself yeah. that people are, I will find that they are often supported. They're not. They're not. It's non-existent.
Irish government funding for NGOs, that has nothing to do with MEPs. Building more modular housing, nothing to do with
well,
Europe.
Housing,
hiring
no,
more
hardy
and tougher housing. Criminal sentences, nothing to do
but
with Europe. Prioritising mental health and investing in step-down
but
health.
Hold on.
No, it's like you're asking people to elect you to the school board to fix the potholes.
I am part of a political party who stand for common sense and all these issues. And when you talk about, for example, housing, yes, there's a lot to do with the
but
EU
these,
in relation to housing.
Some are specifically yours.
Well,
some
of
them
course,
are the common to
course,
the party.
Because, but you know but, why? Because I want people to know who I am. Because I, if they think I'm tough,
but when
I'm
it comes
blind.
To Europe, you're a single issue candidate.
No, absolutely. But do you think I don't make a difference? Because everybody
so
makes a difference.
That.
Everybody makes a difference.
So sorry, when I go onto your website and it's got four issues there, it's got immigration, it's got NGOs, it's got housing.
Yes.
And it has law and order.
Absolutely.
You're accepting that three of those are irrelevant in this
no,
campaign.
I'm not,
you
not,
just said you're a single
not,
issue candidate.
I'm not.
You just said it.
I never said that.
I said, are you a single issue
no,
candidate?
I'm sorry,
this?
I
you said, yes.
Absolutely not. I care about a lot more. And I said to you three times in the last 15 minutes that immigration is not the only thing I want to talk about. There are so many other things
but
we need to talk
rest
about.
The things
like,
that you want to talk about on your website,
but I just mentioned the Habitat Directive. I mean, that's something that affects us greatly in this country. We want to move on, we want to progress. Clontarf is in a really bad situation at the moment. But again, the Habitat Directive stops planning on many occasions because there's a rare spider living somewhere. So all of those things are handled at European level. That affects planning, that affects housing. The reason that I talk about those other things like climate, like housing, like whatever it happens to be is because I want people to know who I am and what I stand for.
But we don't have a housing crisis because of rare spiders.
We started this here on Thursday evening, okay? Simply, we heard there was 160 male migrants to arrive here, okay? People didn't like that. Our town is already under pressure. We don't have services. We don't have doctors. Places in school are tight. We can't get in to see a dentist, okay? We have guys dealing heroin on the streets. They can't speak English, but they can deal heroin, okay? We live in a town, Henry, here with 6,000 or 6,500 people. We have 7 guards. We had 9 until 3 or 4 weeks ago. We here in Roscrea are not racist, not one bit. We're very welcoming. We'd welcome children who need somewhere to stay and need to be fed, okay? However, the problem here is, as I said, we don't have the services, Henry. We don't have the services to provide for the people that went in that door this morning. They're not here, and the government are not listening. If the government think that they can just continue and continue and continue to drop people on our doorstep into an already badly serviced town by the said government and previous governments. You know, we haven't had a TD in this town for 25 years or so. At least 20 years. And it shows. Industry is gone. Everything is gone. The place is it's actually turning into a kip. And it actually hurts me to say that because I'm a proud Tipperary man.
Good morning to you, Cara. It's lovely to talk to
you. Hi.
Hi. Tell me, how did you get...
I can't believe I'm talking to Ireland's most amazing doctor.
I wish you were. But tell me this. How did you get on with the maths? It was supposed to be very hard.
Yeah, it was fair tough. And paper one was definitely the hardest paper in years. And paper two was also quite tough. Now, it was a little bit easier. But paper one was definitely the hardest. But I suppose I can't really complain because I'm only a 12-year-old little squirt. And they were asking me about mortgages and stuff like that. But I don't even own a house yet.
I wouldn't be surprised if you own one quite soon.
Michael was our only child and we adored him. He was beautiful, he was kind, he was fun.
He was mad about sport. If you look around you in our home, you'll see plenty of evidence of that. He also liked golf.
2 years ago, Michael was 6 years old and he had just started experiencing some headaches. He'd started to look at the television in a peculiar way. The did various tests and CT scans and they confirmed that there was a tumour at the base of his spine and his official diagnosis was medulloblastoma.
Our priority became to give him, in his final months, as good a time as we could. The social worker, Niall, in Crumlin, suggested we get in touch with Make-A-Wish. We were really just looking for a video message from Rory. We didn't think anything beyond that. Probably 3 weeks later or so, a message came in from Rory, who included, of course, an invitation from Rory for Michael to meet him at the K Club for the Irish Open in September. We didn't think Michael would be well enough. But come the morning of the Irish Open Pro-Am, courtesy car from BMW was at the door. off we went, and he was brought out on the bogey. Then Rory come down from the ninth tee and say to Michael, "Would you like to play this hole with me?" So amazing. Then when he got to the green, Rory pulled out a putter, which was an exact replica of his own putter, and asked Michael, did he want to take a few putts?
When we say that Make-A-Wish went above and beyond, they thought of everything possible that Michael could have wanted.
Within 3 weeks from that point, he passed, sadly.
What we got from that initial contact with Make-A-Wish exceeded all of our expectations.
It's 3 o'clock, good afternoon. A number of people, including children, have been injured in an incident in Dublin's north inner city. It's reported a group of children were attacked as they came out of school on Parnell Square. It's understood a suspect has been arrested.
It's absolutely horrendous. There's a deep sadness, shock and confusion around the constituency now. And like that, I'm a mother of a young child. But I would have also grown up with parents who actually have children in the school. And just to hear the news today, this afternoon, at just after 1:40, it was absolutely horrific. It's unbelievable.
We have a complete lunatic hooligan faction driven by far-right ideology, and also then this disruptive tendency here, and engaged then in serious violence. Now, we are drafting in resources to deal with that, and that will be dealt with properly.
Good evening, Andrea Gilligan here with a News Talk news special following the violence in Dublin city centre tonight. It's been causing severe disruption across the capital city.
It was just complete chaos. I walked towards O'Connell Street, there was a Garda car on fire. I then took a left turn. The one side of the street, there was a bus on fire. And then at the other side of the street, the Lewis was on fire. There was two buses on fire. I seen, you know, people lifting tables at a smoking area of a hotel and putting these metal tables through the window of the hotel. They were firing bricks and bottles at Gardaí. And then I somehow got caught up in the middle of a Garda baton charge. And I didn't know where to go. But I spoke to a guard then, and he told me to go towards Henry Street and just go that way. That's the safest way out of here. And then when I was walking down Henry Street, Foot Locker, JD Sports, there was just people smashing the windows of these shops and going in and looting.
It's a dark day for Dublin. Very, very dark day for Dublin. It's not something I've ever seen in the time I've been alive. And from the devastation of this afternoon to the absolute disgust of what's going on across the city. Homes across this country now, tonight, hearts are breaking for those young kids and their carer that were involved in a knife incident today. And here we are with special news programmes going on, talking about a city that's burning and a city in flames. It's just not good enough.
Literally right now, while I'm talking to you, it's the footage is O'Connell Bridge in Dublin. There's the Dublin bus now set alight. This is Sky News, 12 minutes past 11.
Well, just on that, so people understand, there was a Dublin bus driver on one of those buses on O'Connell Bridge, physically pulled from that bus and was punched and dragged off that bus before that bus was set alight. And the only crime he committed, that he was not white.
The Pat Kenny Show.
This coming week on the show, we delve into the stark reality of the silent epidemic that's tearing our country apart. Cocaine.
What goes up must come down, effectively, meaning that they have no sense of hope for the future.
We'll talk to people who are dealing with the reality of what's unfolding right on our doorsteps, in our pubs and in our clubs.
A client said to me once that if he ordered a pizza and ordered the cocaine, that the cocaine would arrive before the pizza.
Cocaine, Ireland's secret killer, under the spotlight all this coming week on The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
You know, it was good 20-30 seconds of calling her name before I saw her, and
she was upside down in the ditch, and, you know, her body in not a nice way, you know, twisted, neck twisted. She had quite serious wounds, and I probably didn't even fully kind of comprehend how bad it was even at the time. I just jumped in the ditch, and I didn't even, like, at that point I didn't even think anything fatal had happened here, and I just wanted to pick up her hand and just tell her, like, oh, everything's going to be okay, you know. But, you know, picked up her hand and it was just floppy, you know what I mean? There was nothing there, and I checked for a pulse on her wrist and no pulse, and I checked for a pulse in her neck and no pulse, and I just started doing CPR to her. I just started pumping her chest, and, you know, kind of like the image of that will, I mean, like I'm suffering a lot with whole PTSD of it, and that image comes back, and, you know, I can still picture the feeling of, like, the feeling of pumping her chest, and I just didn't know what to do, and I, you know, it's such a surreal moment to be in, and it almost feels like it didn't even really happen, like, and then some people who passed by, there's a couple of other cyclists and drivers that passed by while I was doing that, and we were waiting for an ambulance, and they got a defibrillator. And so I cut open her jersey, her cycling jersey, to stick the defibrillator patches on. But basically, all I revealed from cutting her jersey open was there was no skin there, and all, you know, down to, like, all the top of her chest just ripped off, and there was nowhere to stick to the patch, you know, from all the skin. And I think it was at that point I just gave up, and I just fell down on the ground outside of the ditch and just fell into a heap.
Dublin Corporation want to get their finger out, start looking after what's up here, not what they're putting into it, not new tenants, because they're walking into beautiful homes. They want to start looking at the tenants that is here, right? And for the playground, the half a playground, the rats can't even come down the slide because it's not slidey. A half of a slidey gave the kids. No swings. That contraption, the water tank is up there. There's no swings for kids. A half of a playground, two umbrellas. That's it. You can't let a child into it. It's piggy dirty. Piggy dirty, that's all. I wouldn't. If I had grandchildren, my grandchildren wouldn't be in it, and that's that. Now, Ormond Square has a lovely playground, gorgeous, but we can't keep bringing our kids around to Ormond Square. We don't live there, we live here. The Bala, they got a new playground. But we can't bring the kids over there either because they're drug addicts and there's drinkers in it.
Are they getting into the houses? Are you worried they'll get in?
Not at the moment, but because everybody is locking up now. Everybody is locking up. But Jodie's on the bottom. Becky's on. That's her bedroom. And who's to say that they can't get in there? And she's a baby in the car. Who should wake up one morning and they're being on top of the baby and a rose? Like, you can't have that. Do you know what I mean? Because if they smell the milk off her from a bottle, they're going to just chew her. What's she going to do for Anna Rose? She's not going to make another one. Is the corporation going to give her one? No. No.
Look at that timeline. I spoke to Vera 24 hours later. Vera hadn't even read the report at that stage. And that was 24 hours after you had pledged your full support for her. Yeah. Do you not actually, in hindsight, look back and say, we should have slowed things down. We should have spoken to Vera in more detail. We should have spoken to the players. And actually, maybe that would have made you aware of some of the issues that have cropped up since.
I just said it wasn't our obligation or duty to go and speak to the people who are part of that report and the review. That's different from us talking to Vera and to the players. And we did speak to Vera and the players, and we do speak to Vera and the players on an ongoing basis. And that's why we took the position that we did take in relation to the report.
But again, you couldn't have had thorough conversations with Vera and the players in that short a period of time. As I say, if 24 hours later, she hasn't even read the full report.
Okay, I didn't know that Vera had said that in relation to the report. She was clearly aware of the report because
she was, but there were specific allegations in it that when it was put to her, these were the first time she'd actually heard of them.
I did the genealogy test a couple of weeks back, and it basically involved me spitting into a test tube, and you know, you kind of half fill the test tube up basically with your own saliva, and you put in the solution and you send it off and you get the results, of which I'm waiting to get. But there's something a little bit unsettling, and I don't know, is it that I'm probably because I'm not really sure what it is I'm going to find out, but am I actually from Donegal, Jennifer?
I can tell you, you're not from Donegal. Do you want to know where you're from?
At all?
There's a little bit of Donegal.
What?
You're mostly, you're 95%
Irish. Oh my
God,
where are you going to say?
Not very far. You're 95% Irish, 5% Scottish.
Right.
And most of your Irishness comes from County Leitrim.
Leitrim?
You're from Leitrim.
I'm trying to think what relatives I have in Leitrim. You could have picked worse places, I suppose, but Leitrim.
Leitrim.
Right. Eamon, I've been
to cities where I have never had to use a taxi or a private car. Mm. You know, in Paris, which I used to visit regularly when my daughter was living there, I used the metro all the time because the metro could get me where I wanted to go very, very quickly.
Yeah, and that's why we will and should build the metro. But take Paris as an example, Pat. They're taking out the car lanes and putting in bike lanes, and it's working.
They're also taking out electric scooters, and you're a proponent of electric scooters, and you have new rules and regs about electric scooters, and they are totally unenforceable, completely unenforceable. They're a pipe dream.
They're not. They'll be introduced in March. And it is to regulate them. We recognise that.
Example,
we do need to regulate them.
2 days in a row, I have seen a scooter flying up Harcourt Street against the traffic. It's not allowed. Mm. For a scooter to go up there, with a Lewis coming down against it and also motor traffic coming down against it, this scooter guy goes up. And I saw him twice, saw him again this morning. Who's going to catch him?
The guard at the Shikana.
How? Stop him. He doesn't have to have identification.
No.
No. So they say, what's your name? My name is Eamon Ryan. Where do you live? I live in blah, 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 blah. Okay, and here's your ticket. How do they catch him? If he doesn't stop, how do they catch him?
So I knew then something was up, and I, like, looking back, I don't know how I didn't cop it. Like, they said he had damaged his legs, but he was up in Beaumont, and I never put two and two together that you wouldn't be in Beaumont,
yeah,
for broken legs. But I suppose it was my dad's way of protecting me. But yeah, he rang and he just goes, Stephen, and I said, yeah, and he goes, I've something to tell you, and I said, John's dead, and he said, how did you know? Who told you? And I said, no one. I just know by the way you're talking. And he goes, what are you going to do? And I just said, nothing. I just hung up and asked them to get the hoist, took me out of the hospital bed in my wheelchair, went downstairs into the kind of where the day room was, but it was late evening, obviously, and I locked myself in a bathroom and listened to music and smoked fags for the night. And that was, yeah, didn't... I always say you're in an awful strange situation when even the option of suicide is taken from you by yourself, because you... I know it sounds weird, but when you're in that situation, it's a comfort to know that I can leave at any time. I have that power. I have the power over my life to basically go. But when even that is taken from you because you're paralysed, you can't get out of the hospital, you can't climb out a window. So you're literally trapped. Even the option of suicide was I took that from myself, even that. And I know it would have been a coward's way out and everyone would say, yeah, yeah, but you didn't kill your friend in a drink driving accident.
You know what? I actually think part of the problem is people are afraid to call out porn. I think they fear if they do, they'll be seen as prudes or illiberal or so on. I have no such concerns about that. You can call me a prude. Well, I despise the pornification society. I actually hate what it's done. I think it portrays sex in a really unrealistic, joyless, comical way, actually, the portrayal of sex. I hate the pressure it puts on young men. I even hate even more the pressure it puts on young women. I hate the way it's affected general society, you know, the whole hairless thing. I won't go into any more detail. I think people know what I mean by that. And we now know from this study, by the way, that it leads to poorer well-being, less people, just young men and young women being less satisfied, poorer self-image, more depressive symptoms, and less likely to engage in safe sex.
We got back on the bus and we were heading down back to Albufeira, and we were in Lagos, we'll say, so it's quite a bit of a trip. And this 70-year-old lady came up to me, very apologetic. She said, I'm really sorry, but my husband wasn't feeling very well. And she handed me a bag of pinky, sort of purpley,
sangria-coloured
chicken piri-piri filled bag. So I was sitting on the front seat of the bus with my, you know, the tour guide bus, and my driver was there, and I said to him, look, we're going to have to pull over here because I have to get rid of this bag. And he was a bit grumpy because he'd been with us all day and they'd been drinking all day, and he said to me, no, I'm not going to stop, I'm just going to slow down. Oh. And you can you can throw the bag out because nobody's going to know, like, you know. So I'm sitting in the front seat of the bus, and he, the door was open, and I slowed down, but it got caught on a hook. And this is true, it came back, it hit me on the side of the head. It went into my eyelashes. It was all over me. I puked. The bus driver puked. And there was a tsunami of puke just started on the whole of the bus, and all these 70 plus people absolutely hurling their guts up. And we literally had to pull in and hose people down. Like. And when we got back to the office, the people were getting off disheveled, and like, they were saying to me, Orla, what did you do to the 70-year-old? Like, so I said, I'd take Club 1830s any day. Sorry,
yeah. They're the ones you need to watch. Excellent story, Orla. Excellent story.
And as I said earlier, that moment in the Nothing Compares to You video, that was in a moment of enormous national pride when we all looked at the TV, and one of ours had gone to the very top of the charts in America, and they'd done it with a version of a song that had found new depths to that song that nobody ever imagined existed before. It was really absolutely remarkable stuff. So you're going to hear it everywhere for the next few days. So just silently reflect as you hear it. I think how blessed we were. It's been